Good morning, 9.5 minutes past 6 o'clock. John Munson sitting in for Joy Cardine this week on the Ideas Network. Well, the Democrats and Republicans have already held several presidential debates. Have you watched them? I'll admit I haven't. This is way too early for me to be paying attention to who is running for president. What about you? Are you tired of the campaign already, or are you hanging on every word, checking blogs daily, following the strategies of the various campaigns, discussing them with your friends? Are you working on a campaign? Are you getting paid to work on a campaign? Are you already tired of working on a campaign? We'd like to hear from you. Our guest this morning is Gloria Toivola, who is professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin-Superior. She joins us by phone, and you can too. Our toll-free number is 800-642-1234. If you're in Madison, use 263-1890. You can reach us on the Internet by sending an email to talk@wpr.org. Good morning, Gloria, and thanks for getting up this early and talking with us.
Good morning, John. Happy to be with you.
Well, in the interest of full disclosure, I should say that Professor Toivola taught me everything I know about state and local government.
Is that good or bad?
I just won't say what year that was.
Okay.
It seems like we're now in some sort of almost never-ending campaign cycle. I mean, the 2004 election was just barely over, and we already had candidates practically announcing or sort of teasing us with their candidacies and certainly raising money and building up organizations. We've seen a lot of articles saying that people get tired of this. But do the real political junkies get tired of it, or do they hang in there for the whole ride?
Well, I think it depends on which political junkies you're talking about. As an academician, I think it is interesting to watch it as a giant chess game where different strategies are attempted, and we see how successful one strategy was or another's. But this, of course, is kind of a horse race approach to things. I think the people who... the general population, as you indicated for yourself, is not necessarily involved that much at this point anyway. I think the people that are probably going to be the most tired with this are the volunteers. Volunteers obviously are not paid, but if it's a shorter period of time, they can afford to take this time from their work and this sort of thing. Whether the volunteers can hang in there, I think, is another question. But in general, I think the American population, unfortunately, in my view, does not take that much of an interest in politics. In this day of cable television and so forth, could easily be avoiding the debates and so forth.
Well, I'm somebody who's interested in the news. I hear it every day. I read newspapers. I read news magazines. I don't watch much news on television. I guess I just have a bias against TV. But, I pay attention to what's going on in the world. And I have worked on political campaigns, not since I started working for Wisconsin Public Radio, but in earlier portions of my life, I worked on campaigns and some local and some for one or another of various presidential candidates. It just seems to me that in the last two decades, we've really changed things from earlier in the 20th century and what we came to think as the traditional kind of campaign seasons. And we're a lot different than other countries are, too, aren't we?
Oh, absolutely. In other countries, they have a set number of weeks during which the campaign takes place, and that's it. So the United States is different from all of most of the rest of the world.
You mentioned cable television, and I was just going to toss out the idea that the 24-hour news cycle is probably driving some of this.
Oh, absolutely, and the cable networks in particular are creating a lot of programming out of this. Clearly, So they're the ones that are trying to drum up the most interest. But I think most people are probably not going to watch 24-hour news continually either.
Well, I would hope not.
Yeah, the stories keep on getting repeated and repeated.
Well, and because reporters are groping for any scrap of a story that they can get on, because this monster needs to be fed constantly, it seems to me that the quality of some of the reporting kind of drops off as well, because people will maybe go with a story that isn't as well-sourced as they would like just because they need something to put on the air.
Oh, absolutely. And the... I think one of the disturbing things is the kinds of issues that they consider most important. They play a role in, or attempt to play a role in, framing the debate, and oftentimes they take the focus away from real policy issues, for example, and focus it on minutiae of how someone looked in a debate and all of these kinds of things, which, quite frankly, are pretty relevant to being qualified to be president of the United States.
We're talking about political campaign fatigue. We're asking if you have it. Yeah, are you somebody who works on a campaign? We'd like to hear from you this morning. You can reach us at 800-642-1234, anywhere you can hear this broadcast. And if you're in Madison, please use 263-1890. You can also send us an email. talk@WPR.org is our address. I'm John Bunsen. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 17 and a half minutes past 6 o'clock. Coming up later today, here on Earth, Radio Without Borders, cultures around the globe are changing their attitudes towards growing old. After 3, here on Earth, Radio Without Borders, Emily Auerbach in for Jean Faraca, and her guests probe cross-cultural perspectives on aging. That coming up later today on the Ideas Network. Well, right now we're talking about the presidential campaign, the campaign trail, and how it seems to be becoming almost an endless cycle of campaigning from one presidential election to the other. And our guest is Gloria Toivola. She's professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin-Superior. Here are our phone numbers again, 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. That's a toll-free number anywhere within the sound of this broadcast. And if you're in Madison, please use 263-1890, 263-1890. You can also use the internet, talk@WPR.org. Well, Professor Toivola, I think public radio has to take its share of the blame for this, because we cover these candidates and all the stories surrounding them just like everybody else does. We do it in a little different way, but those stories are out there. They're news, and if you're going to be a legitimate news organization, you're pretty much forced to cover them, even if you feel that it might not be the time to do it.
Well, that's true. I think you're correct, however, in saying that networks like NPR do cover it differently, in the sense of tending not to focus as much on the, let's just say, the irrelevant kind of minutia that is associated with the campaigns.
Well, some of that minutia can really make a huge difference. Just ask Howard Dean. I mean, you know, the coverage of his the so-called Dean scream in after the Iowa caucuses, he basically that killed his campaign.
Absolutely, and there have been many cases like that historically. I recall, this maybe indicates my age, but the Edmund Muskie, for example, showing some emotion after a newspaper in New Hampshire had attacked his wife and so forth, and it was all over with. I think one of the things that we haven't really thought much about is what is the impact of this sort of thing on the candidates themselves. In other words, this long election period gives more and more opportunities for candidates to experience one of those moments.
Well, the more you're exposed to television and other media, the more you have an opportunity to trip up. I was just in the newscast at the top of the hour. I was listening to the background sound as President Bush was talking about wanting to get an immigration bill passed, and all you could hear in the background was the clicking of cameras. I mean, these candidates can't go anywhere or do anything without someone following them around. It's like the paparazzi following Paris Hilton.
In fact, one of the things that may change this for the future is if candidates this time discover that their activities very early in the campaign have caused them to make some sort of a faux pas, and that they're taken out of the race easily with that. If you take somebody like Thompson from Tennessee, you'll find that maybe it'll be wise for him to wait until fall, because by then other people may have exposed some kind of weakness or something that disturbs the public or whatever. To me, it's possible that in the future, the candidates themselves may not be so wild about this kind of a process.
We've got someone who wants to join us by phone, and let's welcome Hector from Menominee. Hector, good morning. Thanks for calling us today.
Good morning. Thank you. I think that one of the that there are a number of issues with the entire voting process. One of the issues that I see is that the process isn't really friendly to the voter. It doesn't really encourage people in many ways to vote. In some countries, people are fined if they don't vote. It's part of their civic duty. Here, we can get fined for spitting on the sidewalk, but yet, you know, that type of encouragement isn't even thought about, I don't think. But more important, I think that the process doesn't really educate the voter. The person that's out there wanting to be part of this, of what's going on. Good example of that, I think, is the millions of dollars that are collected to put these 30-second commercials, which many of them are propaganda. And a lot of that money could be used not just for that type of thing, but to really educate and have community types of ways the candidates could talk about the issues. And lastly, I think that the media, in many ways, when they report, are giving information to the public like if we were running a campaign ourselves. And
what do you mean by that?
Well, you know, you talk about, well, this is what he should do to win the election. And this is what, you know, it seems that he's attracting this type of voter, as opposed to, you know, what the candidates really stand for and what the real issues are. So anyway, if your guest has any comments on that, it would be appreciated.
Thanks for the call.
You're welcome.
Yes, I think Hector's last point in particular is very well taken, that the media is portraying it as that giant game, which is of great interest, I think, to those of us who are political junkies or interested in the strategy and so forth, whereas they're not talking necessarily about the issues. The second point, or the first point, actually, that he made was that it doesn't educate the voters. Now, here one could argue that having these early debates and so forth really is an effort to educate the voters as they've not been educated before. In the past, with a few primaries determining the outcome and so forth, people in many, many states simply were waiting to see who the candidates were of the two major parties and then making some distinction between them. The debates offer an opportunity for candidates to express those views on important public policy issues. Now, whether that happens is another question. In that debate format that they're using, clearly they're tied to the questions that are asked them and in these debates. And John Edwards is an example in the one case where he said that no one had discussed poverty. And it's probably because most of the Democrats have somewhat similar viewpoints on that. But that would be a very, very significant issue to the general population. So I think there's potential for an improvement in this, in voter information this way, but it's not necessarily coming through.
Well, the comment about how the commentators are portraying the race, it almost reminds me of the color analysts on a football broadcast explaining this move and that move and why they did that and why they're going to this state and what they're going to do next. And then you get all the horse race coverage. This person is up in the polls and this person has these negative attributes and so forth. If you really want to know where the candidates are on the issues, you've got to dig through a lot of what I would call detritus to get to that. It's there. You can find it out, but you have to work for it because you're not going to get it if you're just a casual consumer of the news.
Yeah, you're absolutely right on that. You would have to dig, but not in these days of the internet. I think it's possible to get to those policy papers and so forth much more easily. And so that's another kind of opportunity that we haven't had in the past. Now, I think the other concern, however, is that you can get a general idea of where these candidates are on the issues, but oftentimes once they're elected, circumstances force them into very different kinds of positions. For example, with President Bush, when he was running, of course, he was very critical of President Clinton for engaging in nation building and so forth. And yet this is precisely the kind of circumstance he has found himself in. So sometimes, the circumstances force people into positions that they didn't think that they would be willing to take.
Well, the reality of the job itself is probably a lot different than what anybody would expect. Frankly, sometimes I wonder if wanting to be president wasn't prima facie evidence for insanity. But, who would want this job?
Well, certainly one would have to have a very large ego.
And a very thick skin.
Oh, absolutely. And I think most politicians, by the time they have national recognition, are at that point where they have developed the thick skin. But I frequently ask my students, how comfortable would you be going around the country day after day telling people how wonderful you are?
Yeah, that would get kind of tiring after a while, too. Plus, their handlers give them a set of message points, and everything they say is supposed to come from those message points. The candidates have to get tired of hearing themselves say the same things day after day after day after day.
Oh, absolutely. And then there's a question of whether they're using their own judgment as to the way they should approach an issue or whether their managers are the ones that are really making those decisions.
We're just about at news time, and so we'll take a break here, and we'll give you the phone numbers again and ask you to join us in our discussion. Are you tired of political campaigns already? We're 18 months away from the election. We've got 18 candidates in the race. Which one do you like? Why? Or are you just sick of the whole thing and you just, want to wait around until the fall of 2008 and then make your decision? Let us know. 800-642-1234 is the toll-free number to call. In Madison, it's 263-1890. On the internet, talk at WPR.org. I'm John Munson. This is the Ideas Network. Just about 6:36. Good morning. John Munson here on the Ideas Network, sitting in for Joy Cardine this week. Lots of politics to talk about this morning. Next hour, we'll talk about some strange political bedfellows. The National Rifle Association and the Democrats in Congress may actually be on the same side of a gun issue. You'll want to stick around for that. This hour, we're talking about the political campaigns, particularly the presidential campaigns, which seem to be almost never-ending now. And our guest by telephone, all the way from the head of the lakes, Gloria Toivola, professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin-Superior. Let me give our phone numbers before we get back into our discussion. We do have some open phone lines, and we have some people who have reached out to us already, and we'll get to those calls in just a moment. Here's the number to call toll-free anywhere you can hear this broadcast, 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. If you're in Madison, please use our local number, 263-1890, 263-1890. If you'd prefer to send us an email, send it to talk@wpr.org. Before the break, we were kind of mulling over the various ways that campaigns get covered and how some candidates might do better by just sort of hanging back. John Edwards would seem to be one of those who may be benefiting from all of the attention that's being paid to the front runners in the Democratic primaries.
One could look at it that way, or one could say that John Edwards is slipping behind, which is the way that most of the media is interpreting it right now. And certainly he's a known quantity and so forth. I find your suggestion kind of unusual.
A lot of people find my suggestions unusual.
He's out there campaigning very hard, and I think he's having a very difficult time moving forward against both Clinton and Obama.
Well, he tends to have a different message than either one of them, and so far that apparently hasn't been resonating as well as he had hoped it would.
No, it is resonating with certain groups of people, and I suspect that his message may reach people who are maybe attractive to people who are not currently involved in the electoral process. I think one of the things that this offers is a chance to get people out there and voting who haven't been voting before. Now, the extent to which their views are reflected in the polls right now is hard to say. It's also hard, I think, in the Democratic primary to find stark differences on an issue such as poverty between the Democratic candidates. The contrast would be clear if you were comparing Edwards to many of the Republican candidates. So it doesn't get discussed.
Well, at this point, both of the parties are debating. They're not debating between the debates aren't between the parties. It's candidates within the parties who are debating. And so they're beating each other up, and then they'll have to change tactics once the final two candidates are determined.
Yeah, and one of the interesting things here is that after the voters have seen these individuals for so long, are they going to be able to move to the center ideologically or politically, as they normally have in a general election? Or will they have committed themselves so deeply in the primary process that it'll be difficult for them to move?
Yes, and God forbid you change your mind about anything.
Absolutely. One would think that a reasonable person with different kinds of new information would change their mind.
Well, that's always made sense to me, but apparently I'm not somebody they consult before they do that. Let's go to the phones, and we'll talk first to Ann in Madison. Good morning, Ann. You're on the air.
Hi, I agree with you, John. I think part of the problem is when I first voted, polls weren't mentioned that much, and political conventions were really exciting. Nobody knew who the candidate was going to be until the vote on the floor, and then the candidate usually announced his running mate at the convention. So that's gone. I think polls are the biggest part of the dullness of these endless campaigns, and no information is given in these polls. You don't know who conducted them, who paid for them, how big the sample was, what the questions were, how many people refused to answer. So they're totally meaningless, and most people already know which party they're going to vote for, and they, you know, I can see them during the primaries, but after that, I think they're kind of irrelevant. They're definitely irrelevant. And back when I was taking civics, I didn't hear the civics teacher talk about polls at all. and somehow political science departments have required their members, I think, now to, you know, to talk about politics in terms of the horse race. And third, and most important, I think, it's the big broadcasters, well, the broadcasters in general, who decide how long the campaigns are going to be, when they start, who's eliminated from the race, because everybody's sort of a sheep in this country. And they concentrate on things like their sex lives and whether they're handsome or not or pretty or not, how, you know, their personality works and quirks. And as a result, we don't learn anything about their records, which are really the only thing you need to know to vote wisely for a candidate. And it seems to me that somebody like Kucinich, who's a real Democrat, and he's saying everything Democrats have traditionally believed in, he's voted for things and he's done things, is immediately eliminated by the broadcast media as a non-candidate, and everybody just follows, you know, the what the broadcast media say, and he's considered just worthless, and he doesn't get any attention. And that's just outrageous, I think.
Thanks for the call. A lot to chew on there.
Yes. One of the things that I think we need to realize is that we are willing participants in this process with the media. In other words, if we sat back and said, well, that's what the media is trying to do, they don't really represent people and so forth, that I can make my own mind up, especially based on the kind of information one can get through the internet and so forth today, they would lose that control.
Well, it's certainly true, I think, that in, let's say, if we go back to the middle part of the last century, everybody would get their news from either the newspaper, possibly a news magazine, and from television and radio. So your options were limited in terms of where your information could come from. Now it almost seems like we've got so much, it's you really have to pick your way through it, but it's there. I mean, you can find things out if you really want to know about something. You can find it out now quite easily just by Googling it, I guess.
Right, and the I think one of the things that the public needs to become more cognizant of, is that we're selling candidates very much like we're selling a bar of soap. Or we're selling the latest breakfast cereal or whatever. And today we talk so much about trying to train children to recognize that this is just manipulation. And it was some of the, for example, with the anti-smoking ads that have come up that, you know, we're encouraging young people to see through all of this kind of manipulation. It seems to me that the general population needs some practice in looking through the manipulation. But as advertisers have proved, we can be incredibly gullible. Now, you know, I did want to address Ann's comment, too, about political science departments and the...
I knew you would.
And the emphasis on polling. In the past, there haven't been that many polling organizations, and candidates really didn't... Well, first of all, the polling wasn't as accurate as it is today. But she is correct. You don't, unless they announce who did the poll, you're not really sure who those people are. There are certainly legitimate pollsters out there. But in political science today, we've come to emphasize the notion that, just as in football, winning is everything. And so then we start looking at who is most likely to win, as opposed to what are the positions that these candidates have to take. Now, you know, there's ultimately a relationship back to the voters, because obviously in order to increase your poll numbers, you have to somehow reach out to those voters.
Well, we'll come back to that thought, and we'll take more calls after we check the weather around the beautiful state of Wisconsin. The number is to reach us, 800-642-1234. That's a toll-free number anywhere you can hear this broadcast. In Madison, it's 263-1890. There's room for you in the phone bank right now if you call us. You can send us an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm John Munson. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. 647, almost 648. On this Wednesday morning, John Munson sitting in for Joy Cardine this week on the Ideas Network. Well, here's what's coming up later on today. After 10 o'clock, Mitt Romney's run for the White House has many wondering about his Mormon faith. After 10, Kathleen Dunn talks with an historian and scholar about the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Coming up on Kathleen Dunn after 10 o'clock this morning here on the Ideas Network. This hour, we're talking about presidential campaigns and how we may be suffering from campaign fatigue already. It's 18 months from the next presidential election. There are 18 people running. I dare say most of us could not name them all. Our guest on the phone is Gloria Toivola, who's a professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin-Superior and someone who is following these campaigns very closely and probably knows way more about them, well, certainly knows way more about them than I do. And Gloria, the one of the things that our last caller brought up was the conventions. And it used to be, I remember that was something you almost looked forward to because it was exciting. There was some drama there. There was it was worth watching because things actually happened that mattered. Now it's almost like the conventions are an excuse to have a 3 or 4 day party.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, no one wishes that we had conventions with multiple ballots more than I do. I did my dissertation on this years ago. We haven't had a convention that's gone beyond one ballot since 1952.
Yikes.
So this primary process, primary and caucus process that goes on really is the determining factor in who the candidates are going to be. And so if you want to, in other words, the candidates are able to amass a sufficient number of votes at the convention prior to the convention as such, and that you know, there is no decision to be made. And so, you know, the conventions simply have become a big public relations thing. Where they try to get, you know, their speakers at top times and all this kind of thing. Whereas, you know, if you go into the past, Wilson, for example, was nominated, I believe, after 51 ballots, and it's around 50 anyway. The longest convention went to 103 ballots. So, you know, it really isn't interesting in that regard, but you might just say that the game is different. You know, there was a matter of watching the chess pieces move at the convention time, whereas now it's a matter of watching the pieces move during the primary season.
Does the process, the way it exists now, well, this might actually be a stupid question, but I'll ask it anyway. Does the process, the way we have it now, tend to produce more ideologically extreme candidates than when they were chosen in the so-called smoke-filled room?
I think in the past, the people that participated in conventions, when conventions really did make the decisions, actually had more of an emphasis on who could win. And now when the public plays a greater role, a party can end up nominating someone who may not have that great a chance of winning. In other words, people may be putting their focus on issues and so forth, as opposed to whether this particular candidate can win. So it's kind of a contest between the public and the professionals. And one could argue that, you know, as we go through this process today that is so public and so extensive, that the voters might actually have a greater role to play. You know, that one of the criticisms of American elections is that by the time we get to the general election, it's a choice between Tweedledum and Tweedledee. And so your choices have been narrowed dramatically by the time you get to the general election. So there really is a reason for voters to be involved and interested early on.
The one of the many axioms about politics has been that elections are won by the candidate who gets his or her voters to the polls. It's certainly in the primaries, voter turnout isn't spectacularly high generally, and so it seems like the best organized candidate would have the best chance, whether or not they have the best ideas or not.
Right, but if we compare the primary system that we have primarily today to the old process of selecting delegates and so forth, it actually is much more democratic. And this has been true since the McGovern-Fraser Commission in the Democratic Party and the Dew Commission in the Republican Party, which are two organizations that worked between 1968 and 72 in the two major political parties. And they were putting the emphasis on getting more involved into the general public. So in the past, it really has been a lot of people, you know, you might say old white men in back smoky rooms making the decisions, whereas today it is actually more open to the public.
Let's go back to the phones and take another call. This time it's Doris in Shawano County. Doris, thanks for joining us this morning.
I'm really interested in politics, but not until within a year of the election. I think it's way too early, and the media is putting so much emphasis on what they call the ones most likely to win. I think we should wait and go more on issues, and you're right about the conventions. We go into them, and you can practically name the ones that are nominated and the ones that are going to win before election. We don't hear enough about issues, and we don't hear enough about the so-called underdogs. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Well, the all of the callers certainly have agreed with the idea that these campaigns tend to go on too long, and the coverage doesn't give enough really solid information.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, when Doris's suggestion that, you know, 1 year before the election is the appropriate time, and in other countries, there are sometimes regulations to this effect, that the campaigning doesn't commence until a particular point in time. Now, in the United States, we're very open about these things without those kinds of regulations. And so candidates who desperately want that office are moving it earlier and earlier.
Some open phone lines for you if you'd care to make a comment. Maybe you're somebody who is following this intensely and you like the fact that we've got all this out there. You enjoy the horse race aspect of it, and you really follow this on a day-to-day basis and read all the blogs and so forth. Give us a call at 800-642-1234. Or if you're in Madison, call us at 263-1890. You can also send us an email. talk@wpr.org is the address. Well, it should come as no surprise. A poll that was taken just after the 2004 election said that, let's see, it was something in the area of 61% of the people responding in that poll were basically sick and tired of the whole process by the time the actual election rolled around. And I think that would probably be true no matter how short the campaign was. They do tend to be grueling for everyone.
Oh, absolutely. They're grueling for everyone. And right after an election, I think people have kind of had it. There have been suggestions made by a task force of the American Political Science Association, too, that has suggested that we ask voters to vote too often, and that if we could do things to the system to have them vote less often. For example, having the state and local elections at the same time as the presidential elections or the congressional elections and this sort of thing, so they get over with it, and you know they don't have to face another set of elections.
So maybe perhaps have a national primary where all the primaries happened on the same day, sort of basically have two national elections, one to determine the candidates and then one to determine the winner of the eventual election?
Right. I mean, that would clearly address this issue of asking people to vote too often. But the problem with that, of course, is that candidates without a lot of funding early on would not be able to compete in that kind of a system. And, in fact, that is happening to some extent right now. With so many primaries moved up so early, the candidate without a lot of resources is not going to be able to launch realistic campaigns in all of these states. Now, one of the positive things of these early debates is that actually provides all the candidates with some free airtime. And this is particularly important to those who are not the front runners.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there because we're out of time for this programming cycle, I guess we could call it. Thank you very much, Professor Teuvilla, for joining us this morning. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Okay, you're welcome. It was a pleasure.
This was program 613A. If you'd like a copy of it, you can call the radio store at 800-747-7444. It was produced by Karen Prager with on-air production from Christy Taylor. I'm John Munson, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.